happened to be in my pocket after all this time. Imagine that. But the charm was worn and scratched, and I knew without a doubt it was in his pocket today because it was every day, as it had been for who knows how many years. I believe you'll find this is an object of power for you, Ethan. It always has been for me. Let's not forget, our Lila Jane was a strong woman. She saved my life, even from the grave. I recognized the look on my mother's face in the photo. It was one I thought she saved for me. It was the look she gave me the first time I read the road signs out loud through the car window, before she realized I could read. It was the look she gave me when I had eaten one of Amma's buttermilk pies by myself and slept in her bed with a stomachache as fierce as Amma herself. It was the look she saved for my first day of school, my first basketball game, my first crush. And here it was again, staring out from inside the tiny book. She wouldn't abandon me, and Macon wouldn't either. Maybe he did have some kind of plan. He had cheated death. I pushed the book into my pocket, next to Lena's necklace.
Wait a second. Link walked over. I'm glad you have that little gold book and all, but you said the whole blood pack was gonna be in there, plus Vampire Boy and Lena's mom and the Emperor, or whoever this Abraham guy is, and last time I checked, Han Solo wasn't around. So don't you think we need more than a little book?
Ridley was nodding behind him.
Link's right. You may be able to save Lena, but not unless you can get to her.
Link tried to bend down next to Macon.
Mr. Ravenwood, can't you come with us and take out a couple of guys for us?
Macon lifted an eyebrow. This was the first real conversation he'd ever had with Link.
Unfortunately, son, my incarceration has weakened me.
He's transitioning, Link. He can't possibly go down there. He's incredibly vulnerable.
Liv was still holding Macon up, for the most part.
Olivia is right. Incubuses possess incredible strength and speed. I'm no match for any of them in my present state.
Luckily, I am.
The voice came out of nowhere, and she ripped through the darkness even faster. She was wearing a long black coat with a high neck and wrecked black boots. Her brown hair was blowing in the wind. I recognized the succubus from the funeral right away. It was Leah Ravenwood, Macon's sister. Macon was as shocked as the rest of us to see her.
Leah?
She slid her arm across his back, supporting him, looking deep into his eyes.
Green, eh? That will take some getting used to.
She laid her head on his shoulder, the way Lena used to.
How did you find us?
She laughed.
You're the talk of the tunnels. Word on the street is my big brother's taking on Abraham, and I heard he isn't too pleased with you.
Macon's sister, the one Aurelia took to New Orleans when she left Macon's father. The sisters had mentioned her.
Dark and light will be what they are.
Link caught my eye from behind them, and I knew the question. He was waiting for me to make the call, fight or flight. It wasn't clear what Leah Ravenwood wanted from us or why she was here, but if she was like hunting and she fed on blood instead of dreams, we had to get away, fast. I looked at Liv. She shook her head almost imperceptibly. She wasn't sure either. Macon smiled one of his rare smiles.
Now, what are you doing here, my dear?
I'm here to even the odds. You know I love a good family feud.
Leah smiled. She fluttered her wrist, and a long staff made of polished wood appeared in her hand.
And I carry a big stick.
Macon was at a loss. I couldn't decide whether he looked relieved or concerned. Either way, he was stunned.
Why now? You don't usually concern yourself with Castor affairs.
Leah reached into her pocket and took out a rubber band, pulling her hair into a ponytail.
This isn't just a Castor battle. Not anymore. If the Order is destroyed, we may be destroyed with it.
Macon gave her a meaningful look. I recognized it as his not-in-front-of-the-children expression.
The order of things has stood since the beginning of time. It will take more than a cataclysm to bring about its destruction.
She smiled and swung her staff.
And it's about time someone taught hunting some manners. My motives are pure, like the heart of a succubus.
Macon laughed at the thought. From where I was standing, it didn't sound so funny. Dark or light, Leah Ravenwood could go either way, but it didn't matter to me.
We need to find Lena.
Leah picked up her stick.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Link cleared his throat.
I don't want to be rude, ma'am, but Ethan says hunting's down there with his blood pack. Don't get me wrong, you seem pretty badass and all, but you're still just a girl with a stick.
This?
In a split second, Leah extended the rod straight out inches from Link's nose.
He's a succubine staff, not a stick. And I'm not a girl, I'm a succubus. When it comes to our kind, the females have the advantage. We are quicker, stronger, and more clever than our male counterparts. Think of me as the praying mantis of the supernatural world.
Aren't those the bugs that bite off the heads of the males?
Link looked skeptical.
Yes. Then they eat them.
Whatever reservations Macon may have had about Leah, he seemed relieved she was going with us. But he did have some last-minute advice.
Larkin has grown up since you last saw him, Leah. He's a powerful illusionist. Be careful. And according to Olivia, our brother keeps his mindless hounds with him, a blood pack.
Don't worry, big brother. I have a pet of my own.
She looked up at the ledge above us. Some kind of wild mountain lion, about the size of a German shepherd, lounged on the rocks, its tail hanging over the side.
Bade!
The cat leaped to its feet and opened its jaws, flashing rows of razor-sharp teeth, and jumped down beside her.
I'm sure Bade can't wait to play with hunting's pups. You know what they say about cats and dogs.
Ridley whispered to Liv.
Bade is the voodoo god of wind and storms. Not one you want to screw with.
It reminded me of Lena, which made me feel a little better about the 150-pound cat staring down at me.
Stalk and ambush is her specialty.
Leah rubbed the cat behind its ears. At the sight of the wild cat, Lucille ran over and swatted her playfully. Bade nudged Lucille with her muzzle. Leah bent down and picked her up.
Lucille, how's my sweet girl?
How do you know my great-aunt's cat?
I was there when Lucille was born. She was my mama's cat. My mother gave Lucille to your Aunt Prue so she could find her way around the tunnels.
Lucille rolled around between Bade's paws. I hadn't been so sure about Leah, but Lucille had never let me down. She was a good judge of character, even if she was a cat. A Castor cat. I should have known. Leah tucked the staff under her belt, and I knew the time for talk was over.
Ready?
Macon reached out his hand, and I took it. For a second, I could feel the power in his grip, as if we were in some kind of Castor conversation I couldn't comprehend. Then he let go, and I turned toward the cave, wondering if I would ever see him again. I led the way, and motley or not, my friends were right behind me. My friends, a succubus, and a mountain lion named after a volatile voodoo god. I only hoped it was enough. June 20th. Dark Fire. When we reached the base of the cliff, we hid behind a rock formation a few yards from the cave. Two incubuses were guarding the entrance, talking in low tones. I recognized the scarred one from Macon's funeral. Great. Two blood incubuses, and we weren't even inside. I knew the rest of the pack couldn't be far away. Leave them to me, but you may not want to watch. Leah signaled Bade, who loped to her side. The staff flashed through the air like lightning. The two incubuses never saw it coming. Leah had the first incubus on the ground in seconds. Bade lunged, catching the other by the throat and pinning him. Leah rose, wiping her mouth on her sleeve, and spat, a bloody spot marking the sand. Old blood, 70, 100 years. I can taste it. Link's mouth hung open. Is she expecting us to do that? Leah bent at the neck of the second incubus for barely a minute before she was waving us on. Go. I didn't move. What do I do? Fight. The entrance to the cave was so bright, the sun could have been shining inside. I can't do this. Link looked into the cave nervously. What are you talking about, man? I looked at my friends. I think you guys should go back. This is too dangerous. I shouldn't have dragged you into this. Nobody dragged me anywhere. I came to... Link looked at Ridley, then turned away awkwardly. To get away from it all. Ridley flipped her muddy hair dramatically. Well, I certainly didn't come here because of you, Short Straw. Don't flatter yourself. As much as I like hanging out with you dorks, I'm here to help my cousin. She looked at Liv. What's your excuse? Liv's voice was quiet. Do you believe in destiny? We all looked at Liv like she was crazy, but she didn't care. Well, I do. I've been watching the Caster Sky for as long as I can remember, and when it changed, I saw it. The Southern Star, the 17th Moon, my selenometer that everyone at home teased me about. This is my destiny. I was supposed to be here, even if... no matter what. I get it, said Link. Even if it wrecks everything, even if you know you're gonna get busted... sometimes, you gotta do it anyway. Something like that. Link tried to crack his knuckles. So, what's the plan? I looked at my best friend, who had shared his Twinkie with me on the bus in second grade. Was I really going to let him follow me into a cave to die? There's no plan. You can't come with me. I'm the wayward. This is my responsibility. Not yours. Ridley rolled her eyes. Obviously, the whole wayward thing hasn't been explained to you properly. You don't have any superpowers. You can't leap over tall buildings in a single bound or fight dark casters with your magic cat. Lucille peeked out from behind my leg. Basically, you're a glorified tour guide who's no better equipped to face a bunch of dark casters than Mary P. over here. Aquaman, coughed Link, winking at me. Liv had been quiet until now. She's not wrong. Ethan, you can't do this alone. I knew what they were doing, or more like not doing, leaving. I shook my head. You guys are idiots. Link grinned. I'd have gone with brave as hell myself. We stayed pressed against the cavern walls, following the moonlight pouring through the crack in the ceiling. As we rounded a corner, the rays became impossibly bright, and I could see the pyre below us. It rose from the center of the cave, golden flames encircling it and licking up the pyramid of broken trees. There was a stone slab, which almost resembled some kind of Mayan altar, balanced on top of the pyre as if suspended from invisible wires. A set of weathered stone stairs led up to the altar. The snaking circle worn by dark casters was painted on the cave wall behind it. Seraphine's body was lying on top of the altar, just as it had been when she had appeared in the woods. Nothing else was the same. Moonlight streamed through the roof and hit her body, radiating outward in all directions as if refracted by a prism. It was like she was holding light from the moon she was calling out of time, Lena's 17th moon. Even Seraphine's golden dress looked like it was stitched together from 1,000 shining metallic scales. Liv breathed. I've never seen anything like it. Seraphine seemed to be in some kind of trance. Her body rose a few inches above the stone, the folds of her dress cascading down like water, past the edges of the stone altar. She was amassing some serious power. Larkin was at the base of the pyre. I watched as he moved closer to the stone stairs, closer to... Lena! She lay collapsed, her hands extended toward the flames, her eyes shut. Her head was in John Breed's lap, and she looked unconscious. He looked different, blank, like he was in a trance of his own. Lena was shaking. Even from here, I could feel the biting cold radiating from the fire. She must have been freezing. A circle of dark casters surrounded the pyre. I didn't recognize them, but I could tell they were dark by their crazed yellow eyes. Lena, can you hear me? Seraphine's eyes flashed open. The casters began to chant. Liv, what's happening? I whispered. They're calling a claiming moon. I didn't need to understand what they were saying to know what was happening. Seraphine was calling the 17th moon so Lena could make her choice while she was under the influence of some sort of dark cast, or the weight of her guilt, a dark cast of its own. What are they doing? Seraphine is using all her power to channel the Dark Fire's energy, and her own, into the moon. Liv was fixated on the scene, as if she was trying to memorize every detail, evil or not. It was the Keeper in her, compelled to record history in the making. Vexes whipped around the cavern, threatening to bring down the walls, spiraling, gaining strength and mass. We need to get down there, Liv nodded, and Link grabbed Ridley's hand. We made our way down the side of the cavern, keeping to the shadows until we reached the wet, sandy cave floor. I realized the chanting had stopped. The casters were silently transfixed, watching Seraphine and the pyre, as if they were all under the same mind-numbing spell. Now what? Link looked pale. A figure stepped into the center of the circle. I didn't have to guess who it was, because he was wearing the same Sunday suit and string tie from the visions. His white summer suit made him look even more out of place among the dark casters and the helix of Vexes. It was Abraham, the only incubus powerful enough to summon this many Vexes from below. Larkin and Hunting stood behind him, and every incubus in the cavern fell to one knee. Abraham raised his hands up toward the vortex. It's time. Lena, wake up! The flames surrounding the pyre surged higher. In front of the pyre, John Breed gently lifted Lena to wake her up. Hell, run! Lena looked around, disoriented. She didn't react to my voice. I wasn't sure if she could hear anything. Her movements were unsteady, as if she didn't know where she was. Abraham reached out toward John and lifted his hand slowly. John jerked, then picked Lena up in his arms, rising as if being pulled by a string.
Lena!
Lena's head fell to the side, her eyes closing again. John carried her up the stairs. The cocky attitude was gone. He looked like a zombie. Ridley pushed her way closer.
Lena's totally disoriented. She doesn't even know what's happening. It's an effect of the fire.
Why would they want her to be passed out? Doesn't Lena have to be conscious to claim herself?
I thought that was a given. Ridley stared at the fire. Her voice was uncharacteristically serious, and she was avoiding my eyes.
The claiming requires volition. She'll have to make the choice.
Ridley sounded strange.
Unless
what? I didn't have time to try to interpret Ridley.
Unless she already has.
By leaving us behind, by taking off the necklace, by running off with John Breed.
She hasn't, I said automatically. I knew Lena. There was a reason for all of it, everything.
She hasn't. Ridley looked at me.
I hope you're right.
John reached the top of the altar, Larkin following behind him. Larkin bound Seraphine and Lena together under the light of the 17th moon. I felt my heart pounding.
I have to get Lena. Can you help me?
Link grabbed two chunks of rock, big enough to do some damage if he could get close enough to use them. Liv flipped through her notebook. Even Ridley unwrapped a lollipop and shrugged.
You never know.
I heard another voice behind me.
You aren't going to be able to get up there unless you're fixing to take care of all those vexes on your own. And I don't remember teaching you how to do that.
I smiled before I turned around. It was Amma, and this time she had brought some of the living with her. Aurelia and Twyla stood nearby, and together the three old women looked like the three fates. Relief washed over me, and I realized part of me had thought I'd never see Amma again. I crushed her in a hug, which she returned, straightening her hat. That's when I saw Grandma's old-fashioned lace-up boots as she stepped out from behind Aurelia. Make that four fates.
Ma'am?
I nodded to Grandma. She nodded back as if she was about to offer me tea on the veranda at Ravenwood. Then I panicked because we weren't at Ravenwood, and Amma and Aurelia and Twyla weren't the three fates. They were three ancient, brittle-boned southern ladies who were probably about 250 years old between them, wearing support hose. And Grandma wasn't much younger. These four fates, in particular, had no business being on a battlefield. Come to think of it, neither did this one wait. I slipped free from Amma's grip.
What are you doing here? How did you find us?
What am I doing here?
Amma sniffed.
My family came to the Sea Islands from Barbados before you were a thought in the good Lord's mind. I know these islands like my kitchen.
This is a castor island, Amma, not one of the Sea Islands.
Course it is. Where else would you hide an island you can't see?
Aurelia put her hand on Amma's shoulder.
She's right. The Great Barrier is hidden among the Sea Islands. Amory may not be a caster, but she shares the gift of sight with my sister and I.
Amma shook her head so hard I thought it was going to fly off.
You didn't really think I was gonna let you wade knee-deep in quicksand on your own, did you?
I threw my arms around her and hugged her again.
How did you know where to find us, ma'am? We had trouble finding this place ourselves.
Link was always a step ahead or a step behind. The four of them looked at him like he was a fool.
Busting open that ball of trouble the way you boys did? with a spell older than my mama's mama? Might as well have dialed up the Greater Gatlin Emergency Phone Tree.
Amma took a step toward Link, who took a step backward, out of pointing range. She didn't let go of me, though. That's how I knew what she was really saying. I love you, and I couldn't be prouder. And you'll be grounded for a month when we get home. Ridley leaned closer to Link.
Think about it. A necromancer, a diviner, and a seer. We didn't stand a chance.
Amma, Aurelia, Grandma, and Twyla turned to Ridley as soon as she spoke. She reddened, lowering her eyes respectfully.
I can't believe you're here, Auntie Twyla, she swallowed. Grandma?
Grandma held Ridley by the chin and stared into her bright blue eyes.
So it's true. She broke into a smile. Welcome back, child.
She kissed Ridley on the cheek. Amma looked smug.
Told you, it was in the cards.
Aurelia nodded.
And the stars.
Twyla scoffed, dropping her voice to a low whisper.
Cards only show the surface of things. What we have here, this is cut deep, past the bone, and out the other side.
A shadow crossed over her face. I looked at Twyla.
What?
But she smiled, and the shadow was gone.
You need some help from Laba.
Twyla waved her hand back and forth over her head. Back to the business at hand.
The other world,
Aurelia translated. Amma knelt down, unwrapping a cloth filled with small bones and charms. She might as well have been a doctor preparing her surgical tools.
Calling the sort of help we needs, my specialty.
Aurelia took out a rattle, and Twyla sat down and got comfortable. Who knew what she was going to have to raise? Amma spread out her bones and struggled with one of her mason jars.
South Carolina graveyard dirt. Best there is. Brought it from home.
I took the jar from her and opened it, thinking about the night I followed her into the swamp.
We can take care of those vexes. Won't stop Seraphine or Melchizedek's good-for-nothing brother, but it'll cut off some of her power.
Grandma looked up at the dark cyclone of vexes fueling the fire.
My goodness, you weren't exaggerating, Amarie. There are a lot of them.
I saw her eyes move from Seraphine's motionless body to Lena in the distance, and the lines in her brow deepened. Ridley let go of her hand, but didn't leave her side. Link let out a sigh of relief.
Man, I'm going back to church next Sunday for sure.
I didn't say anything, but what I was thinking wasn't that far off. Amma looked up from the dirt she was spreading below her feet.
We're gonna send them back down where they belong.
Grandma adjusted her jacket.
Then I'll deal with my daughter.
Amma, Aurelia, and Twyla sat cross-legged on the damp rocks and joined hands.
First things first, let's get rid of those vexes.
Grandma stepped back and gave them some room.
That would be lovely, Amarie.
The three women closed their eyes. Amma's voice was strong and clear, despite the whirring of the vortex and the humming of dark magic.
Uncle Abner, Aunt Delilah, Aunt Ivy, Grandma Marcella, we are in need of your intercession once more. I call you now to this place. Find your way into this world and banish the ones that don't belong.
Twyla's eyes rolled back in her head, and she began to chant.
Les lois, my spirits, my guides, tear apart the bridge that carries these shadows from your world into the next.
Twyla raised her arms above her head.
Repassez.
Again,
Aurelia spoke the word in English.
Les lois, my spirits, my guides, tear apart the bridge that carries these shadows from your world into the next.
Twyla continued to chant, mixing her French Creole with Ama and Aurelia's English. Their voices overlapped like a chorus. Through the crack in the cavern ceiling, the sky darkened around the ray of moonlight, as if they had summoned a thundercloud to bring on a storm all their own. But they weren't calling a thundercloud. They were creating a different kind of vortex. Darkness spiraling above them like a perfectly formed tornado, touching down in the center of their circle. For a second, I thought the enormous spiral was only going to get us killed faster, attracting every Vex and Incubus within sight of it. I should have known better than to doubt the three of them. The ghostly figures of the Greats began to emerge, Uncle Abner, Aunt Delilah, Aunt Ivy, and Sulla the Prophet. They were forming from the sand and dirt, their bodies being woven from it, bit by bit. Our three fates kept spinning.
Tear apart the bridge that carries these shadows from your world into the next.
Within seconds, there were more spirits from the other world, Shears. They were being born from the spiraling earth, like butterflies from a cocoon. The Greats and the spirits attracted the Vexes, causing the shadowy creatures to rush toward them with the horrible scream I remembered from the tunnels. The Greats began to grow. Sulla was so big, her rows of necklaces looked like ropes. All Uncle Abner needed was a thunderbolt and a toga, and he could have been Zeus looming above us. The Vexes shot out from the flames of the dark fire, black streaks tearing across the sky. Just as quickly, the shrieking streaks disappeared. The Greats inhaled them, as Twyla had seemed to inhale the Shears that night in the cemetery. Sulla the Prophet glided forward, her heavily ringed fingers pointing at the last of the Vexes, turning and screaming in the wind,
"Tear apart the bridge!"
The Vexes were gone, leaving nothing except a dark cloud overhead and the Greats, Sulla in the forefront. She was shimmering in the moonlight as she spoke her final words.
"Blood is always blood. Even time cannot bind it."
The Greats disappeared, and the dark cloud dissipated. Only the billowing smoke from the dark fire remained. The pyre was still burning, and Seraphine and Lena were still tied to the slab. The vortex of Vexes was gone, and something else had changed. We were no longer silently watching, waiting for an opportunity to make our move. The eyes of every Incubus and Dark Caster in the cave were on us, canines bared and yellow eyes blazing. We had joined the party, whether we liked it or not.
June 20th. 17 moons. The blood incubuses reacted first, dematerializing one by one and reappearing in pack formation. I recognized Scarface, the incubus from Macon's funeral. He was in the front, his black eyes calculating. Hunting was predictably nowhere in sight, too important for simple slaughter. But Larkin was standing in front of them, a black snake coiled around his arm, second in command. They surrounded us in seconds, and there was nowhere to go. The pack was in front of us, and the cave wall behind us. Ama pushed her way between the incubuses and me, as if she planned to fight them off with her bare hands. She didn't get the chance.
"Ama!"
I called out, but it was too late. Larkin was standing inches from her tiny frame, wielding a knife that didn't look anything like an illusion.
"You're a real pain in the ass for an old lady, you know that? Always poking around where you don't belong and calling up your dead relatives. About time you joined them."
Ama didn't move.
"Larkin Ravenwood, you're gonna be 10 kinds of sorry when you try to find your way out of this world and into the next."
"Promise?" I could see the muscles in Larkin's shoulder move as he pulled back his arm, preparing to lunge at Ama. Before he could strike, Twyla threw her hand open and white particles flew through the air.
Larkin cried out, dropping the knife and rubbing his eyes with the back of his hands.
Ethan, watch out!
I could hear Link's voice, but everything was happening in slow motion. I saw the pack coming at me, and I heard something else, a humming sound that started low and rose slowly, like the crest of a wave. A green light flew up in front of us. It was the same pure light the arc light emitted when it spun in the air in front of us, right before we released Macon. It had to be Macon. The hum grew louder and the light surged forward, hurling the blood incubuses backward. I looked around to see if everyone was all right. Link was bent over with his hands on his knees like he was going to puke.
That was close.
Ridley patted his back a little too hard and turned to Twyla.
What did you throw at Larkin? Some kind of charged matter?
Twyla smiled, rubbing the beads on one of the 30 or 40 necklaces she wore.
Don't need charged matter, cher.
Then what was it?
Sel manger.
She spoke the words in her thick Creole accent, but Ridley didn't understand. Aurelia smiled.
Salt.
Amma whacked me on the arm.
Told you salt could keep away evil spirits. Evil boys, too. We have to move. There isn't much time.
Grandma rushed toward the stairs, carrying her cane in her hand.
Ethan, come with me.
I followed Grandma up to the altar, the smoke from the fire creating a thick haze around me. It was intoxicating and suffocating at the same time. We reached the top of the stairs. Grandma held her cane out toward Seraphine, and immediately it began to glow with golden light. I felt a wave of relief. Grandma was an empath. She had no powers of her own, except the ability to use the powers of others, and the power she was taking now belonged to the most dangerous woman in the room, her daughter Seraphine, the one channeling the energy of the dark fire to call the 17th moon.
Ethan, get Lena!
Grandma called. She was in some sort of psychic holding pattern with Seraphine. It was all I needed to hear. I grabbed for the ropes, loosening the knots that bound Lena and her mother together. Lena was barely conscious, her body resting on the freezing stone. I touched her. Her skin was ice cold, and I felt the choking grip of the dark fire as my body started going numb.
Lena, wake up! It's me!
I shook her, and her head rolled from side to side, her face red from the icy rock. I lifted Lena's body, wrapping my arms around her, giving her what little warmth I had. Her eyes opened. She was trying to speak. I held her face in my hands.
Ethan.
Her lids were heavy, and her eyes shut again.
Get out of here.
No. I kissed her as I held her in my arms. No matter what happened, it was worth this one moment, holding her again.
I'm not going anywhere without you.
I heard Link scream. One incubus had escaped the powerful wall of light that was holding the rest of them at bay. John Breed was behind Link, with his arm around Link's neck, canines bared. John still had the same glazed expression, like he was on autopilot. I wondered if it was an effect of the intoxicating fumes. Ridley turned and threw herself onto John's back, tackling him. She must have taken him by surprise because Ridley wasn't strong enough to take him down on her own. The three of them fell to the ground, grappling for the upper hand. I couldn't see more than that, but it was enough to make me realize we were in serious trouble. I didn't know how long the supernatural field would hold, especially if Macon was the one generating it. Lena had to end this. I looked down at her. Her eyes were open, but she looked past me, as if she couldn't see me.
Lena, you can't give up now. Not when... Don't say it. It's your claiming moon. It's not. It's her claiming moon.
It doesn't matter. It's your 17th moon, El. She stared up at me, her eyes empty.
Seraphine raised it. I didn't ask for any of this. You have to choose, or everyone we care about could get killed here tonight. She looked away from me. What if I'm not ready? You can't run from this, Lena. Not anymore. You don't get it. It's not a choice, it's a curse. If I go light, Ridley and half my family will die. If I go dark, Grandma, Aunt Del, my cousins, they'll all die. What kind of choice is that? I held her tighter, wishing there was a way I could give her my strength or absorb her pain. It's a choice only you can make. I pulled Lena to her feet. Look at what's happening. People you love are fighting for their lives right now. You can stop it. Only you. I don't know if I can. Why not? I was shouting. Because I don't know what I am. I looked into her eyes, and they had changed again. One was perfectly green, and one was perfectly gold. Look at me, Ethan. Am I dark or am I light? I looked at her, and I knew what she was. The girl I loved. The girl I would always love. Instinctively, I grabbed the gold book in my pocket. It was warm, as if some part of my mother was alive within it. I pressed the book into Lena's hand, feeling the warmth spread into her body. I willed her to feel it, the kind of love within the book, the kind of love that never died. I know what you are, Lena. I know your heart. You can trust me. You can trust yourself. Lena held the tiny book in her hand. It wasn't enough. What if you're wrong, Ethan? How can you know? I know because I know you. I let go of her hand. I couldn't bear to think of anything happening to her, but I couldn't stop it from coming. Lena, you have to do it. There's no other way. I wish there was, but there isn't. We looked out over the cavern. Ridley looked up, and for a second I thought she saw us. Lena looked at me. I can't let Ridley die. I swear she's trying to change. I've already lost too much. I already lost Uncle Macon. It was my fault. She clung to me, sobbing. I wanted to tell her he was alive, but I remembered what Macon said. He was still transitioning. There was a possibility he still had darkness within him. If Lena knew he was alive and there was a chance she could lose him again, she would never choose to go light. She wasn't capable of killing him a second time. The moon was directly over Lena's head. Soon the claiming would begin. There was only one decision left to make, and I was afraid she wasn't going to make it. Ridley appeared at the top of the steps, breathless. She hugged Lena, taking her from me. She rubbed her face against Lena's wet cheek. They were sisters, for better or worse. They always had been. Lena, listen to me. You have to choose. Lena looked away, pained. Ridley grabbed the side of her cousin's face, forcing Lena to look at her. Lena noticed right away. What happened to your eyes? It doesn't matter. You need to listen to me. Have I ever done anything noble? Have I ever let you sit in the front seat of the car a single time? Have I ever once saved you the last piece of cake in 16 years? Ever let you try on my shoes? I always hated your shoes. A tear rolled down Lena's cheek. You loved my shoes. Ridley smiled and wiped Lena's face with her scraped and bloody hand. I don't care what you say. I'm not doing it. Their eyes were fixed on each other. I don't have a selfless bone in my body, Lena, and I'm telling you to do it. No. Trust me. It's better this way. If I still have some darkness inside me somewhere, you'll be doing me a favor. I don't want to be dark anymore, but I'm not cut out to be immortal. I'm a siren.
I could see the recognition in Lena's eyes.
But if you're immortal, you won't...
Ridley shook her head.
There's no way to know. Once there's darkness in your blood, you know.
Her voice broke off. I remembered what Macon said. Darkness does not leave us as easily as we would hope. Ridley hugged Lena tight.
Come on. What am I gonna do with 70 or 80 more years? Can you really see me hanging around Gap Dung, making out with Link in the back of the beater, trying to figure out how the stove works?
She looked away, her voice faltering.
Can't even get decent Chinese in that crappy town.
Lena held tight to Ridley's hand, and Ridley squeezed it, then gently pulled her hand away, one finger at a time, and placed Lena's hand in mine.
Take care of her for me, Short Straw.
Ridley disappeared back down the steps before I could say a word.
I'm scared, Ethan. I'm right here, El. I'm not going anywhere. You can make it through this. Ethan? You can, El. Claim yourself. No one has to show you the way. You know your own way.
Then another voice joined mine, from a great distance and also from within me. My mother. Together we told Lena, in the one stolen moment we had, not what to do, but that she could do it.
Claim yourself,
I said.
Claim yourself,
my mother said.
I am myself.
Lena said,
I am.
Blinding light surged from the moon like a sonic boom. Shaking the rocks loose from the walls, I couldn't see anything but the moonlight. I felt Lena's fear and her pain pouring over me like a wave. Every loss, every mistake was seared into her soul, creating a different kind of tattoo. One made from rage and abandonment, heartbreak and tears. Moonlight flooded the cave, pure and blinding. For a minute I couldn't see or hear anything. Then I looked over at Lena, tears running down her cheeks and shining in her eyes, which were now their true colors. One green, one gold. She flung her head back to face the moon. Her body twisted, her feet hovering above the stone. Below her, the fighting stopped. No one spoke or moved. Every caster and demon in the room seemed to know what was happening, that their fates hung in the balance. Above her, the brightness of the moon began to vibrate, the light pulling until the whole cave was one ball of light. The moon continued to swell, like a moment from a dream. The moon split into two halves, dividing in the sky directly over where Lena stood. The moonlight behind her seemed to form a giant, luminous butterfly with two brilliant, glowing wings, one green, one gold. A cracking sound echoed across the cave, and Lena screamed. The light disappeared. The dark fire disappeared. There was no altar, no pyre, and we were back on the ground. The air was perfectly still. I thought it was over, but I was wrong. Lightning sliced through the air, splitting into two distinct paths, hitting its targets simultaneously. Larkin. His face twisted in terror as his body seized, then started to blacken. He seemed to be burning from the inside out. Black cracks crawled along his skin until he turned to dust, blowing across the cave floor. The second bolt traveled in the opposite direction, hitting Twyla. Her eyes rolled back in her head, Her body fell to the ground as if her spirit had stepped out and tossed it aside. But she didn't turn to dust. Her lifeless body lay on the ground as Twyla rose above it, shimmering and fading until she became translucent. Then the haze began to settle, the particles rearranging until Twyla looked more as she had in life. Whatever she had left behind in this life, it was finished. If she had business here again, it would be because she chose to. Twyla wasn't tethered to this world. She was free, and she looked peaceful, as if she knew something we didn't. As she rose up through the crack in the cave ceiling toward the moon, she stopped. For a second, I wasn't sure what was happening as she hovered there. "Goodbye, Cher." I don't know if she really said it or if I imagined it, but she reached out a luminous hand and smiled. I lifted my own hand toward the sky and watched as Twyla faded into the moonlight. A single star appeared in the Castor sky, a sky I could see, but only for a second. The Southern Star. It had found its rightful place back in the sky. Lena had made her choice. She had claimed herself. Even if I wasn't sure what that meant, she was still with me. I hadn't lost her. Claim yourself. My mom would be proud of us. June 21st. Darkness and light. Lena stood straight and tall, a dark silhouette against the moon. She didn't cry, and she wasn't screaming. Her feet had settled on the ground on either side of the giant crack that now marked the cave, splitting it almost entirely in two. "What just happened?" Liv was looking at Amma and Aurelia for answers. I followed Lena's eyes across the great expanse of rocks and understood her silence. She was in shock, staring at one familiar face. "It appears Abraham has been interfering with the order of things." Macon stood in the cave entrance, framed by light from a moon that was beginning to stitch itself back together. Leah and Bade were at his side. I wasn't sure how long he'd been standing there, but I could tell from the look on his face he had seen everything. He walked slowly, still adjusting to the feeling of his feet touching the ground. Bade kept pace with him, and Leah kept one hand on his arm. Lena softened at the sound of his voice, a voice from the grave. I heard the thought, barely a whisper. She was afraid to even think it. "Uncle Macon?" Her face went white. I remembered how I felt when I saw my mother at the cemetery.
"An impressive little trick you and Seraphine managed to pull off, Grandfather. I'll give you that. Calling a claiming moon out of time, you've outdone yourself, really."
Macon's voice echoed in the cavern. The air was so still, so quiet, you couldn't hear anything except the low churning of the tides.
"Naturally, when I heard you were coming, I had to make an appearance."
Macon waited as if he was expecting an answer. But when he didn't get one, he snapped.
"Abraham, I see your hand in this."
The cave began to shake. Rocks fell from the jagged crack in the ceiling, beating down onto the floor. It felt like the whole cavern was about to collapse. The sky above grew darker. The green-eyed Macon, the light caster, if that's what he truly was, seemed even more powerful than the incubus he was before. A rumbling laugh echoed off the rock walls. Down on the watery cave floor, where the moon no longer shone, Abraham stepped out of the shadows. With his white beard and matching white suit, he looked like a harmless old man, instead of the darkest of blood incubuses. Hunting stayed at his side. Abraham stood over Seraphine, whose body was lying on the ground. She had turned completely white, covered in a thick layer of frost, an icy cocoon.
"You call on me, boy?"
The old man laughed again, sharp and quick.
"Ah, the hubris of youth. In 100 years you will learn your place, grandson."
I tried to mentally calculate the generations between them, 4, maybe even 5.
"I am well aware of my place, grandfather. Unfortunately, and this is exceptionally awkward, I believe I'll be the one to send you back to yours."
Abraham smoothed his beard deliberately.
"Little Macon Ravenwood, you were always such a lost boy. This is your doing, not mine. Blood is blood, just as dark is dark. You should have remembered where your allegiances lie."
He paused, looking at Leah.
"You would have done well to remember that too, my dear. But then, you were raised by a caster."
He shuddered. I could see the anger in Leah's face, but I could also see the fear. She was willing to try her luck with the blood pack, but she didn't want to challenge Abraham. Abraham looked at Hunting.
"On the subject of lost boys, where is John?"
"Long gone, coward." Abraham whipped around to face Hunting.
"John isn't capable of cowardice. It's not in his nature. And his life means more to me than yours. So I suggest you find him."
Hunting lowered his eyes and nodded. I couldn't help but wonder why John Breed was so important to Abraham, who didn't seem to care about anyone. Macon watched Abraham carefully.
"It's touching to see how concerned you are about your boy. I certainly hope you find him. I know how painful it is to lose a child."
The cavern started to shake again, and rocks fell around our feet.
"What have you done with John?"
In his rage, Abraham seemed less like a harmless old man and more like the demon he truly was.
"What have I done with him? I think the question is, what have you done to him?"
Abraham's black eyes narrowed, but Macon only smiled.
"An incubus who can walk in the sunlight and retain his strength without feeding. It would require a very specific coupling to produce those qualities in a child. Wouldn't you agree? Scientifically speaking, you would need mortal qualities, yet this boy John possesses the gifts of a caster. He can't have 3 parents, which means his mother was..."
Leah gasped.
"An Evo."
Every caster in the room reacted to the word. The surprise spread like a ripple, a new kind of coldness in the air. Only Amma looked impassive. She folded her arms and fixed her eyes on Abraham Ravenwood as if he was just another chicken she was planning on plucking, skinning, and boiling in her banged-up pot. I tried to remember what Lena told me about Evos. They were metamorphs with the ability to mirror human form. They didn't just step inside a mortal body like Seraphine. Evos could actually become mortals for short periods of time. Macon smiled.
"Precisely. A caster that can take on human form long enough to conceive a child, with all the DNA of a mortal and a caster on one side and an incubus on the other.
You have been busy, haven't you, Grandfather? I didn't realize you were matchmaking.